starts at 7:30. Tickets are just $1.50. You get your money's worth the first 15 minutes, and the rest is free. That's Saturday night. Advance tickets on sale now at Renfro's Drugstore.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. That is the telephone number. Punch those numbers into your phone. Give us a call.
I love the emphasis that you place on those letters.
WMFO. I can do that. I can do that like...
Sometimes if I can't sleep at night, I just think Derek's voice saying WMFO.
I can do that golden voice thing if I'm properly motivated. We are back to normal. There are no more special shows coming until maybe Halloween. Maybe,
I was going to say, for a while.
Maybe the night before Halloween we're going to do a thing like we did this past year. But as of right now, nothing until Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I was going to say, we really don't. It's like a very concentrated amount of special shows and then nothing for a while.
You're back into the belly of the beast, as it were. So, but we do have a bit of housekeeping. Shea Spillane, how did you do with your Oscar picks? How many did you get right?
I mean, I was impressed with myself that usually I'm terrible at it. And I think I got at least 50% right. But a lot of them were like shocking upsets. I had no idea that it was going to go in that direction. Because a lot of the ones that I got wrong were ones that you and Molly chose something else, and I chose kind of the underdog, right, and then it went in entirely the other direction. A lot of them being a good example. A lot of the big ones being a good example.
I am so infuriated with the Academy.
I knew you were going to be
ripped at the Academy.
That's why I'm so stoned right now. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not. just doubled the dose of my meds.
I can barely find words to express my anger with the Academy. First of all, my apologies, dear listeners. This was my worst year in a decade.
Is it bad that makes me super happy?
I did not win my Oscar pool.
Oh, pobrecito.
I got 10 wrong.
You got 10?
I got 10 wrong.
And I feel like you got like a lot of the important ones wrong.
I'm usually in the, well, yeah, I got the same ones wrong that everyone did. I picked Roma for Best Picture and Glenn Close
for Best Actress. Yeah.
And that did not happen.
I was happy that the ones that I was really hoping would be true that I chose were true.
The winner of the Oscar pool at the party that I attend every year in 2019 was...
You know that you're a middle-aged man, right? That you go to an Oscar party.
But the winner of the Oscar pool at the party was Molly.
Really?
Molly won.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
Molly beat me.
Get it, Mrs. Gary?
And she beat me because the Academy is full of idiots.
Evidently, based on, like, I didn't even watch it. Like, I was doing something else. And I just woke up the next morning and just read the, you know, the breakdown of how everything went.
You may have heard that people were furious about one of the Oscars on Monday. And I am furious about one of the Oscars.
Which one?
Well, you saw the stories, right? It was all over the internet. People were freaking out like...
I just nodded. I'm sorry. Sometimes I forget you guys can't see us.
how did this movie win? What were they thinking? How does this movie possibly get this award? And everybody's losing their minds. And I'm losing my mind, too. because best sound editing was a complete screw up. A complete screw up.
I knew you'd be mad about that.
I sat here.
Which I even, you know, I love that movie, but I said they should get best sound mixing.
Which it did, which it deserved. I sat here and I explained it's sound effects. There are no sound effects in Bohemian Rhapsody.
There are lots of sounds, but no sound effects.
Sound effects. The creation of sound for like a motion picture.
It's not like there's like a car crash or like something. Oh, I love when you get mad. It's so much fun. I needed this.
These are people who are in the industry. How can you be that dumb? How can you not understand the difference between sound editing and sound mixing? Because that, by the way, is the reason Molly won and I lost.
Because she doesn't know the difference.
She picked Bohemian Rhapsody for both. And Bohemian Rhapsody won both.
Which, I mean, I am super glad that Bohemian, I keep forgetting his freaking name. The guy who played Freddie Mercury.
Rami Malek.
Thank you. I was very glad that he
deserved
like that. Yeah, like
absolutely
that was it. That was one of the ones I watched Bohemian Rhapsody the other day.
He did do some of the singing,
and I know.
So did some Canadian Christian singer, by the way. There were like three.
Oh, really?
The two
that
of them,
I did not know.
The two of them and Freddie Mercury outtakes from the Queen recording sessions made up Freddie's vocal.
But is that
parts.
like our discussion last week made me want to watch that movie again?
Yeah.
And that was the thing, is that's what I took away from it, because I had chosen Bohemian Rhapsody for best actor and best sound mixing. And I watched the movie and was like, it should be, there are maybe movies with better examples of this or that, but he has to win best actor. Like, yeah. It was so, his performance was unbelievable, especially as somebody, I grew up on Queen. So like, I know all the weird affectations of Freddie Mercury.
When you sit there and you watch the movie, if you haven't seen it yet, if you've ever seen a video with Freddie Mercury in it, if you've seen concert footage of Freddie Mercury, Rami Malek is Freddie Mercury.
I mean, he must have studied like hours and hours and hours of footage, because even like I was watching it with my mother, and even him walking down the stairs.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's exactly how Freddie Mercury would walk down the stairs.
It's ridiculous.
Like just the posture, the way he moves, everything. And that's always so difficult when you're depicting an actual human being, like someone that actually existed. Because if it's a fictional character, you can kind of make up things about them, you know? Like one of my favorite characters ever is Lucille Bluth in Arrested Development. It's the mother or grandmother, however you'd like to look at it, in Arrested Development. But so much of that was just her, the actress, putting herself into the role, doing things that she wanted. Whereas in this case, he had to try to emulate one of the best musical artists that the world has ever seen.
Oh, one of the great frontmen of all time.
Yeah.
Like, one of the great performers.
I started crying when they did the recreation of Live Aid. Like, I started crying, and my mom's like, are you sad? My friend passed, for our listeners. RIP Brody. Wanted to say that tonight. But my mom looked and was like, is this you crying about? And I was like, no, it's just so beautiful. Like, it's amazing, especially that he knew he was dying and he gave that sort of performance.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
There are... if you tuned in last week, we did give you a couple. I did get Short Subject Documentary correct, which was period, end of sentence. That
you
was
did
a dead
get that
heat.
Right. I got that wrong. I said Marguerite.
And I did, which it should have. No, that was animated. Wait, no.
No, Marguerite was the one.
No, live action. I said documentary.
Oh, you were talking about the anime? No.
Short documentary.
Yeah, Marguerite was one of those. I get it wrong. You
no,
get it right.
No, Marguerite was short live action.
Oh.
That was the one that went to Skin. Which was the film that I hated.
I'm sorry, I got the two confused.
Skin was the one that we talked about.
The ones that are less like commonplace, what's the word I'm looking for? Like commonplace items, I always mix them all up.
And I got documentary feature right for Free Solo. So
yes,
those were two of the tough ones of the night, and I was feeling really good when I got those. I don't feel bad that Black Panther won production design and costume design, because I believe I said this. I know I said this privately to people. I believe I said this on the air last week. That was going to be a test of who is voting in Hollywood. And if it's old Hollywood, both of those awards were going to go to the favorite. If it was new young Hollywood, the new Academy membership, it was going to go to Black Panther. So Black Panther got both of those.
I was going to say, Black Panther got way more awards than I expected them to. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it was a bad film or anything, but I didn't think it was going to get as many nods as it did. Like, the Academy's head must have started to hurt.
Yeah. The ones that really shocked me, other than what happened with sound editing, which was just wrong, okay? Please change the name of that award to Sound Effects so that people understand what it is. Because your voters are too dumb to get it.
I totally second that.
Your voters are too dumb to get it. Yeah, call it Sound Effects.
They are not going to, because they're like, is that the same thing as sound editing? No, a big fat isn't. Like, not even close. Sound editing is something that I am capable of doing. Sound mixing, however, I don't know how to make a proper boom. Like
the one that,
and I don't mean the kind of microphone.
The one that really shocked me was Green Book winning Best Original Screenplay, which
I agree.
Out of
it was like they could get one or the other, but not both.
Yeah, I mean, First Reformed was written by Paul Schrader, Taxi Driver, Raging Bull. Give the guy a freaking Oscar already.
That's funny. That's the way I feel about Glenn Close.
The Favorite, I thought, was the best script of the year, without question. Roma,
I didn't think that they win Best Original Screenplay. I figured that Roma would either win what it won or Best Picture.
It does take a script to do that. And it's a gorgeous work of cinema. But it's a
marriage of like 19 different factors.
Yeah. You know what the takeaway is for Roma? It may not have won Best Picture, but they'll be talking about it in film schools for the next 30 years, and no one will be talking about Green Book. Other than to say, watch it for Mahershala Ali. And Vice absolutely did not deserve screenplay.
Well, that's like, part of me almost thinks that Green Book won Best Picture because they had to give Best Actor to Rami Malek, and it was like we gotta toss them some kind of bone.
Roma should have won. We all know Roma should have won. the reason that Green Book won is because all the directors and producers, I'm convinced, put it first on their list and put Roma last, because you would need a couple of big guilds to swing that Best Picture Oscar with the preferential ballot. And the directors and the producers have made it very clear, abundantly clear, that they hate Netflix, that they don't want to reward Netflix, that Netflix is the problem. So they're not going to give a Netflix movie Best Picture. And it looked like in the buildup to the Oscars that all of that was sort of fading away. At the end of the day, it was what I said back in January when these announcements first came out, where I sat here and I said, Roma will not win Best Picture because Netflix.
Well, that's the thing that I hate, is that the Academy is such an antiquated thing. I mean, it's just like the Electoral College, if you think about it, where it's a set group of people making decisions for a huge amount of people.
Yeah.
And they refuse to graduate with the times. Like, Netflix, that is what it is now. Like, think of Orange is the New Black, the Lizzie Borden Chronicles, Grace and Frankie, think of the Ted Bundy Files, think of all these things that have come out on Netflix that are much better than anything you can see on TV right now.
But the studios don't like it because it
keeps them from making money.
No, it's not because it keeps them from making money. It's because it challenges their authority, and because it is too big for any of the studios to buy. That's the real problem, is that Netflix, Disney is not going to go buy Netflix. And Disney is the only ones that could even conceive of buying Netflix. So
Disney
bought...
I'm sorry. Anytime Disney comes up, I'm like, well, they're a bunch of jerks.
Disney bought Fox instead. And so now what you have, there used to be 6 movie studios in America. Now there are 5 movie studios and Netflix. And Netflix is basically sitting there saying, you know, anything the big studios don't want to do, bring it over here. We'll take it. We'll make it.
Yeah.
We'll give you some money.
And it a lot of times ends up being fantastic pieces of film or TV. Or I don't know if we can call it TV anymore because it's not. But the theoretically, same, television shows.
The same studios that loathe Netflix, the same studio executives that gripe about Netflix, are also more than happy to offload their bad movies, like The God Particle, aka Cloverfield, you know, whatever that thing is, or Bright, movies that they spent a lot of money on that they know don't stand a chance in hell in the theaters, more than happy to sell it to Netflix. So you can't have it both ways.
Well, that's the thing, is that it's like one can't exist without the other.
Then again, this is Hollywood. Hypocrisy runs fast and deep. We should get on to the news.
Yes, we should. Well, in local news, this is fun. A home man admitted in federal court yesterday to embezzling more than $1 million in a long-running scheme to defraud a Franklin company where he served as the chief financial officer. This man's name is Robert A. Salzberg. He pled guilty to one count of mail fraud and five counts of filing false tax returns.
Yeah, that's the one they're going to get you on.
Yeah. U.S. District Court Judge Allison D. Burroughs will sentence him on June 5th. According to the Patriot Ledger, from 1998 through 2014, so we're talking about 16 years, he was responsible for day-to-day accounting and finance operations of this precision metal fabrication company in Franklin, of which he was a 50% co-owner. That's, I think, the important note to make. 50% co-owner. What inspires people to embezzle?
So is
their own livelihood.
Yeah, so he owns half the company, and he's stealing money.
Yeah, he's stealing money from a company that he owns. So basically,
why should I make 50% when I can make 100%?
I was going to say, so basically, whoever owns the other 50% is who he's stealing from.
How long did it take him to steal $1 million?
16 years.
Dumb.
I know, right?
No.
If you're going to do something wrong, do it right. Well, honestly, though, like, the thing is, thinking in the taking on the brain role of a con artist, it does make more sense to take a little over a long period of time.
Yeah, 16 years, he's taken about like, 65 grand a year.
Yeah, like if he took out, if he ripped them off for $1 million in 1 year, it would be like so noticeable.
Yeah.
You just look at me like this, there's something wrong here. But I'm not trying to say like, good job, dude. But because there was a guy in Quincy when I was growing up who ripped off a bunch of elderly people. And I remember that was like the first time I realized what embezzling was and tax fraud was. And it's a horrible, very hardworking, honest people. It ruins their lives.
It's not a good look.
But he did do the wrong thing the right way. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, you got away with it for 16 years. So, you know. I normally would not read something from one of Boston's columnists, and I particularly would not read something from Howie Carr, but...
Oh, goodness.
This little gem in the Boston Herald, because Howie had the more complete version of events than any other source, I had to go with this, and he's written this somewhat as a news story. The woman who was arrested in Falmouth on February 15th for allegedly assaulting a 23-year-old Mashpee man wearing a MAGA hat was again arrested Monday, this time by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement as an illegal immigrant from Brazil who has been living illegally in the United States since overstaying a tourist visa in 1994.
In Falmouth?
In Falmouth.
What?
Immigration Customs Enforcement spokesman John Mohan said in a statement, quote, Rosianne Santos is currently facing local charges for assault and other offenses. She is presently in ICE custody and has been entered into removal proceedings before the federal immigration courts. After her first arrest, Santos admitted to Channel 25, quote, I had a little bit to drink. Maybe that's the reason that I couldn't walk away, but being discriminated for so many times in my life, I just had to stand up for my life, end quote. The alleged victim, Brighton Turner, a Mashpee man, said in an interview that in addition to assaulting him as he ate and repeatedly knocking the MAGA cap off his head, the suspect told the bartender, quote, poison this kid's drink, end quote.
Oh my God.
Turner said he joined some friends for dinner at the Casa Vallarta Mexican restaurant in Falmouth. He and his friends were sitting at the bar, as was the illegal immigrant. She started saying, what does your hat say? What does your hat say? I told her, and she said, why would you wear that hat here? I said, it's America. I can wear this hat wherever I want. As Turner and his friends ate, the woman continued to berate him, and finally, he said, she went over and pushed his hat off. The bartender called 911, and when the cops arrived, he showed them the video. Someone had taped this. They were escorting the woman out of the bar when she again lunged at the American taxpayer, hitting him. This is where Howie gets his little thing in here. The bartender, Gio Macaro, told Channel 25, quote, I couldn't imagine somebody just coming up and hitting them when there's cops right here. In the incident report, Falmouth police described the Brazilian's eyes as bloodshot and glassy. Last week, I asked Turner, this is Howie Carr, if he felt he was the victim of a hate crime. Quote, I would like to say no, but honestly, I was minding my own business and she threw a fit over my beliefs. So I guess by definition, yeah, I am a, parentheses, a victim of a hate crime. the illegal immigrant told Channel 25, quote,
this is so absurd.
He's not the victim. I am the victim. I have been bullied. Okay. No. Not okay. You are not the victim. You are in this country illegally, and you are assaulting an American citizen because you don't like his hat.
This hurts my brain. And, well, the problem beyond her doing that.
I'm not here, by the way, to gin up support for idiots wearing MAGA hats, but this one's pretty cut and dry.
It's a matter of mutual respect to have freedom of speech. And that, I think...
Not in Brazil. We should point that out.
Is the problem. That is the problem. That is true. But that is the problem, really, with people kind of shooting themselves in the foot in terms of this whole, like, anti-Trump thing, is our listeners know very well how much I hate our president, how much I wish he was not our president. That being said, I don't go out and attack his supporters out of two things. One, they have the right to support whoever they want. Two, it validates their feelings towards us.
Right.
It makes, for you to go out, I was just attacked by somebody on Facebook about Donald Trump when I just made a post for my followers. I did not go on someone's page and put some stuff. I didn't argue with anybody. But he said, when I said, how much time do you, he said, like, what's wrong with him? I said, how much time do you have?
Yeah.
And he said, you're smarter than that, Shay. And I said, well, here's the thing. There are many things I could list that are wrong with our president, but I know that my attacking you is a useless effort.
Right.
Because I'm not going to change your mind. It's like banging your head against a brick wall. The only thing that's going to result from it is the wall not breaking and me being frustrated with a headache.
Yeah.
Like, he could shoot the Pope and his followers would still follow him. And just, so I said, is that smart enough for you? But that's the thing, is that we're validating Trump supporters' feelings by behaving this way. And I have varied opinions on immigration and people living here illegally. I mean, I met a lot of Mexicans when I lived in LA who are some of the most wonderful people I've ever met.
If you go to LA, like, half the population is people from Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
You
like,
know,
like I've talked about on the show before, my pharmacy in LA was called CVS Pharmacy y Mas.
Yeah. Yeah. Some are here legally, some are not. But if you go to LA, you are going to. It's like if you go to
Especially
Georgia.
Especially if you work in a restaurant.
If you go to Georgia, you are going to encounter Georgians. If you go to LA, you are going to encounter Mexicans. I mean, it's pretty much, you know.
But behavior like this is setting us, like, people think that they're making a difference when they're actually, like, the people that attacked that high school kid, whose name I purposely forgot, but the high school kid that was the Lincoln Memorial.
Right.
That they thought that they were pushing the cause forward. But they said it back because everyone's just looking at us as these volatile, mindless attack mode idiots.
Yeah.
When there's actually a lot of intelligence behind it. It's just that there's not really a way. It's like arguing with somebody about abortion.
When you look at it, when you look at a 16-year-old kid and you say you are everything that's wrong with America, you better go check your head, all right?
Yeah, right?
Go take a look in the mirror because really you are what's wrong with
I
America.
I think about when I was 16. I mean...
Yeah. So let's see if we can get some positive takeaways from this story. Number one, don't get into fights.
Yeah, okay? That's probably... For all of us, good advice. Excellent advice.
Number two, don't get into bar fights. Really, if you like fights, don't get in a bar fight.
Yeah, a bar is pretty much the worst place to get into a fight.
That is a whole different category.
Everyone's drunk.
Yeah, that's a whole different category of fighting that you're probably not ready for. Number three, do not resume the fight when the police have arrived, because you are giving them immediate visual proof that you are assaulting and battering somebody that they are going to write down in their police report, and you will automatically be convicted. Number four, absolutely do not do any of the above if you are an illegal alien, because that will get you thrown out of the country.
That's the thing is, like, I mean, they can't do anything about it now. I lived in Italy as an illegal alien, technically.
Were you getting in a lot of bar fights over in Italy?
No, I was watching my butt as much as I could.
Yeah.
Because I knew I do anything wrong, I am in way more serious trouble than anybody else. For the record, I was there on a tourist visa, and I was planning on leaving the country and re-entering, but then I decided to just leave altogether.
Well, I believe that's the case with this individual as well. You know, she was planning on leaving eventually, but somehow found herself in America 25 years later after her tourist visa expired.
Yeah, that happens sometimes.
It just happens. You know, hey, you know what? Let's stay for another week. It's not going to hurt anybody. And 1 week turns into 25 years and a house on the Cape and a bar fight in Falmouth.
Oh, my goodness. Well, speaking of racist issues, I suppose, in national news, a racist, a con man, and a cheat. Those are just a few of the accusations Michael Cohen, President Donald Trump's former longtime attorney, leveled against his own boss during his 7 hours of public testimony before Congress today. This is all according... This is all according to NBC News. Cohen delivered a damning account of the president's business and campaign practices just hours after Trump opened the second nuclear summit with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Yeah, poor timing.
Oh, we love him so much. Oh, wait. No, we don't. I can't even decide which one of those two people I'm talking about. Democrats mostly stuck to questioning Cohen about Trump's alleged criminal conduct, while Republican members on the committee largely sought to discredit his testimony by painting him as a liar and as profit-seeking and someone whose words were not to be trusted, and in part because he's on his way to prison.
To be fair, full disclosure, he's on his way to prison for lying to Congress.
But the way that I feel about it...
But, Shay, he's on his way to prison for lying to Congress, and he lied to Congress again today.
Duly noted and agreed upon. But, okay, 8 felony counts of tax evasion, bank fraud, and campaign finance violations, as well as 1 count of making a false statement to Congress.
Yes.
The way I feel about it is that he knows he's going to serve a 3-year sentence. He knows this is happening. So the way I feel is that I've had people get me to do things that I wouldn't normally do, for money or for lots of things. And I think that he's gotten to the point where he's gotten in trouble. There's nothing left for him to lose. His life is never, ever, ever going to be the same.
But at the same time,
he might as well throw the guy who convinced him to do all that stuff under the bus.
This is the pre this is the moment of contrition before the redemption tour when he gets out of jail. That's what this is.
But no one's ever going to hire him in any capacity at the same level he was at.
Of course they will. He's seen the light. He's got Clinton's representing him now.
Oh, I love the Clintons.
He's got the Clinton. the Clinton's lawyer is the one that brought him in on this. So,
but I still stand by my statement that while that may be true, and I hope that he does, because he was honestly the first person to throw their hands up in the air and be like, this dude's off his rocker. Like, this, none of what is happening right now is okay. And even at the expense of his own freedom. And I'm not saying that he's a saint, because obviously he is not.
No.
But the fact that he came forward and is now saying, you know what? Screw it. I'll just say everything. I'll tell you everything that's true. Like, even if it's slightly embellished, I always say the truth lies somewhere in the middle. So it's probably his version of the truth. Nonetheless, he told the truth. He told people what they needed to hear.
I am going to point
About being inside of that situation behind closed doors that no one otherwise would ever be privy to.
I am going to point listeners to a stunning source. You're going to be shocked when I say this, because
is it, Mariah Carey?
No. It puts this in context, and I cannot believe I am recommending. Don't read anything else on this site. Okay, just read this one thing.
Oh, God, is it TMZ?
No, it's USA Today.
Don't read anything else on that site.
Hot garbage, okay? Hot garbage on USA Today.
I mean, I read a lot of news sources, but never that.
But one of their opinion columnists, James S. Robbins, dropped this little nugget mid-afternoon today. Headline, Michael Cohen's testimony isn't delivering earth-shattering damage to Donald Trump. And he then proceeds to pick apart the whole thing and basically say, this is a giant waste of everybody's time. And I'm like, wait a minute. USA Today published this? USA Today. Like
Did you guys make a deal with Harvard and get one of their grads?
You guys are like a stone's throw away from becoming Gizmodo Media Group. You guys are a stone's throw away from being Jezebel or The Root. You publish biased nonsense.
Oh my God, that's the exact word that popped into my head.
And you're like, yeah, you know what? The Michael Cohen thing, there's no there there. What? USA Today said this? There was one nugget in Cohen's testimony that I thought was fabulous. And it involves the Trump, Trump, that's a Freudian slip, the Trump Charitable Foundation. In his opening statement, this is from USA Today, Cohen outlined how Trump had him arrange for a straw bidder to drive up the price of a portrait of Trump at a charity auction. Stop loading advertising so I can read this. The objective was to ensure that his portrait, which was going to be auctioned last, would go for the highest price of any portrait that afternoon, Cohen said. The price was driven up to $60,000. Cohen says the fake bidder was then repaid by the Trump Foundation, which is a charitable organization, despite Trump, quote, keeping the art for himself, end quote. So this is, we talked about the nonsense that the Trump Foundation was doing late last year when it was dissolved, might have been early this year, when it was dissolved by the courts. And they were like, you can't do that anymore. And at the time, I raised the question of how many millionaires and billionaires are actually doing this. They set up a charitable foundation, and then they use it to bid on sports memorabilia at charity auctions. So the whole thing is like a big tax dodge for them.
Well, that's this whole...
But this one takes the cake. This is Donald Trump using his charitable foundation to artificially inflate the price of a portrait of himself so that it will be the highest priced portrait sold at the auction. Donald Trump!
Sometimes I have to pinch myself to remind myself that this is our reality.
History's greatest monster.
Well, that's what I love. Like I said, somebody attacked me on a post about him. And it's one of those things, especially when you've had a difficult few days, it's one of those things that's so nice when people just rush to your defense.
Yeah.
And one person just named like 20 things that he's done while citing how he knows it's true. Like the very real source of knowing that it's true. And I just like started laugh crying reading it, being like, because like I said, I made the whole point of like, I'm not going to bother like putting energy. I have a radio show to do. I'm not going to bother putting energy into this. And then somebody else is like, I will.
This bit with bidding up the price of the portrait would fall under that's a thing that happened. If it had been someone other than the President of the United States on this show, if it was just rando billionaire doing this, we'd be talking about that at the end of the show as that's a thing that happened. And that's not the only story we have
that's
this week.
That's true. I hate that that's true.
That is not the only story we have this week that could be that's a thing that happened were it not for the people involved. So
yeah,
stick around. It's going to get fun. All right.
Oh, I can't wait to hear your entertainment story. I purposely left it for you.
There were... Oh, no.
Oh, really?
I think we have different ones then. Uh-oh. No.
You don't have that?
No. I thought you were going to do that. You said last week you couldn't wait to talk about it.
I put the thing that happened over the weekend. I'll get it.
All right. From CNN. NYPD Hate Crimes Task Force... investigating Nazi drawings found at an elementary school. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has directed the State Police Hate Crimes Task Force
at an elementary school
to assist the New York Police Department in its investigation of Nazi drawings found Friday morning at an elementary school in Queens. Quote, I am appalled and disgusted by the swastikas and other anti-Semitic symbols of hate that were scrawled in a Queens schoolyard, Cuomo said in a statement. In New York, we have zero tolerance for such vile acts of anti-Semitism. Dozens of swastikas, a Nazi eagle, and the words Hail Hitler, not Heil, Hail Hitler.
At least speak proper German if you're going to do this.
Were found drawn in chalk on the pavement of PS 139's schoolyard.
Jesus.
Someone wrote Hail Hitler in chalk on a playground. And the New York...
Society, you're making it really difficult for me to continue wanting to stay alive.
The New York State Police Hate Crimes Task Force is on its way to Queens to find out who picked up the chalk and wrote Hail Hitler.
At an elementary school.
At the playground. Councilwoman...
Wait. Is this where my niece goes?
It's PS 139. In Queens. She may be talking to the State Police Hate Crimes Task Force.
She's four.
Just so you know. Councilwoman Karen
Costner. About to be five. Happy early birthday, Emily.
Councilwoman Karen Koslowitz, who represents the district, told CNN her office received photographs from a resident in the apartment building next to the school and immediately informed the police. According to Koslowitz, the area is predominantly Jewish neighborhood. Now, I will say that the extent of this isn't like somebody drew a couple of swastikas.
This is like they like tagged the entire area.
They covered the playground in swastikas. Somebody spent a lot of time and used a lot of chalk, to add these swastikas to the playground. This is City Councilor, Councilwoman Karen Koslowitz. Quote, this was exceptionally scary today, Koslowitz said, describing the images as horrible, just horrible. This was exceptionally scary today. Now, I bring this story up for two reasons. Number one, Tim Pool talked about this on YouTube. And if you are not watching Tim Pool on the six nights a week that we're not on the air, highly recommend it. It's TimCast.
Because Tim, this is the only thing you should be doing on Wednesdays.
No, but I mean, but Tim's, you can watch him after we're done at 9. But Tim's fantastic. And Tim asked a question in his video reporting on this, basically saying, Was it always like this? I want to know from you older people. I happen to be an old. Was it always?
You are indeed.
Was it always like this? And my answer to that is no. I grew up in the 1970s. Swastikas were everywhere.
I love that you almost just called them swastikas.
Okay. Swastikas were on bathroom walls. Swastikas were painted as graffiti on the side of buildings. Young people drew swastikas on their book covers.
Well, and that's, I was going to say, that's the funny thing. Funny is the wrong word to use here. But I remember growing up, there was a kid who was suspended for making a swastika out of Legos.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, when I was growing up, it was, you don't do that.
And we would have gotten in trouble if we'd been caught doing it. And certainly if you had swastikas drawn on your book cover, like, that would be the end of that book cover.
Yeah.
But it's not, nobody was going to call the state police hate crimes task force.
Yeah.
All right. So to answer your question, Tim Pool, no, we did not call in the state police when elementary school kids were drawing swastikas on things, which, by the way, given that they wrote Hail Hitler,
they don't even know how to be hateful properly.
I believe is what happened. I think this falls under that vast group of hate crimes committed by bored kids. I think that's what this is.
And I mean, a lot of it just speaks to what they're learning from their parents, what they're learning at home.
Yeah, but it's not even that. Like, the kids see it, and the kids see that, but everybody...
I mean, I grew up in an Irish Catholic family from Boston. I didn't know what a swastika was until that kid made it with Legos when, right, I was nine. Like, it's absurd that there are children who know to do that, who know that that's a thing.
But you gotta
know,
but you gotta,
Hail Hitler, even if they can't spell it properly, because it's Heil Hitler. I'm saying that out of context.
You gotta think
obviously.
Like a bored kid. You gotta think like a bored kid. And what do kids know?
I was a bored kid. I would always just draw really elaborate middle fingers on the ground.
Exactly. And why and why did you do that?
Because I was bored.
Right, but what were you hoping? Somebody's gonna see it and freak out.
And be shocked, yes.
Yeah.
But there's a difference. The difference is a middle finger equally offends everybody.
Right.
A swastika, on the other hand.
Kids aren't thinking in those terms.
Well, maybe they should before they write Hail Hitler somewhere.
But this is the thing. All the kid knows is that this upsets people. This really gets the adults going.
I mean,
going.
I guess, like, Hitler would have let my entire family be chill, and I still get very offended by things like that. So
now that you're that you're doing this in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood, tells me you've either got some edgelord teenagers who are doing this as, like, epic troll, or
some kid thinking, like, having just learned it and thinking it's the funniest thing ever,
because
they want to get a rise out of somebody.
Exactly.
I guess I understand.
That's why they're doing this.
Hey, well,
I challenge the New York State Police Hate Crimes Unit to prove me wrong on this, but...
Wouldn't it be so funny to see them cuff a six-year-old, though?
I'm going to go way out on a limb here. I'm going to go way out on a limb and say this is bored kids. Now, that was one reason that I brought this up, was to answer Tim Pool's question.
I'm like 90% sure this is the elementary school my niece goes to.
No, no. We did not always react to this like this, okay? When I was growing up, if somebody was drawing swastikas on stuff, you would probably get sent to the principal's office, and the principal would explain to you why that was inappropriate and why that was wrong, and teach you that you shouldn't do that.
Like the kid with Legos. That's what happened.
And put the fear of God into you. And then if you did it again, you'd get suspended. Because they always began by assuming you didn't realize what you were doing when we were kids. They were always like, do you understand what that means? We'd be like, yeah, Hitler. Hitler's great, you know? And then they'd be like, wait a minute. No, who told you Hitler's great? And they'd explain it to you, and it would be a teaching moment. If you did it again after they'd explained it to you, then they'd be like, all right, you're deliberately a jerk, or you are deliberately targeting people. We're going to call your parents, and you're going to get a timeout.
See, in my case, the kid who did that with Legos also ran around the room and flashed it in everyone's face, screaming, pennies for Pine Street, pennies for Pine Street.
Yeah.
So he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing, and he deserved to be suspended for that. That's a different thing. Like, we...
I mean, it is... The irony of all of this is that it is a cool-looking symbol, and which is why it was so effective, you know? Like, marketing... Bravo.
I'm not going to go in depth on the casual anti-Semitism that existed when I grew up. There was a lot of it. Another part of it was...
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's filled with hate, but...
Another part of it was, you know, when I was growing up in the 1970s, there were still a lot of World War II veterans around. There were still a lot of World War II documentaries all over the place, World War II movies on TV all the time. Everybody saw swastikas a lot when I was growing up. Because it'd be on TV.
And it's just like I said, like when I say it's a cool symbol, I'm not endorsing what it stands for. Right. I'm saying it's just from a geometry, visual art standpoint, I understand why, even completely innocently, why it's an attractive thing to draw. Obviously, if you draw Hitler next to it, then it takes on a different connotation. Yeah. But if you run around shoving it in people's face, screaming pennies for Pine Street, yeah, it takes on a different connotation,
but I still see this.
I can understand why people liked it so much, just like seeing it being like, I'm gonna draw that.
Yeah, this is bored kids. This is what this is. It's a little bit like sometime between first grade and fourth grade, a child will learn the F word.
I was more fifth, but then I was Catholic, so, you know, yeah. I was a late bloomer.
Public school, you're going to learn between first and fourth grade.
I went to public school.
I only
knew swears in Chinese. I grew up in Quincy.
Right, but you went to public Catholic school, right?
No, I went to public school.
All right. Because we had public Catholic school when I was growing. I think they still do.
Really?
But somewhere between first and fourth grade, your child will learn the F word, and they will realize that it has power, and they will say it quietly. And they'll share it amongst their friends. They'll be like, if you say the F word, everybody freaks out. If you say the F word, everybody freaks out. And sooner or later, the kid...
I miss being a kid.
Sooner or later, the kid, either out of frustration or boredom, is just going to blurt it out. And all the adults are going to go nuts. And the kids are going to be like, yay, I got what I wanted. You know, that's why kids do this stuff.
My niece said it a couple of weeks ago, actually.
Yeah.
And it was... one of those moments, there's an episode of Modern Family about it, actually, but it was one of those moments where I was like, I know I'm supposed to reprimand her right now, but all I can do is laugh.
It's just so adorable.
It's so cute. Oh, my goodness. It's just like a picture of innocence saying the least innocent word in our entire language.
No.
Maybe not the least, but, you know, top five least.
Now here's
we can't say it even though we're talking about it right now. So that tells you how innocent it is.
Here's the second reason I bring this story up. Many years ago, I was the assistant editor of a newspaper in a nearby community that shall remain nameless. And we were running a story about a change in zoning rules that had been proposed that I believe would have allowed commercial businesses, retail and such, to encroach upon a residential neighborhood. And the residents of this neighborhood were not having it. They were a bunch of not in my backyard NIMBY types who were all bent out of shape. So one of these neighbors... is talking to our reporter, and when asked for her thoughts about this zoning change, her response was, I think it's just sick. That was her response to a zoning rule. I think it's just sick. As a young editor, I found this hilarious. And I also found it to be the most extreme response I could think of to zoning regulation. And so we made it a pull quote in the article. And this is in the 1990s. So the newspaper came out on Thursday. On Friday, it may have been Thursday afternoon, but I believe it was Friday. We were contacted by an attorney. We were contacted by the woman saying that she was going to hire an attorney and sue us because we had made her the laughingstock of the town. Every place she went, people were saying, I think it's just sick. Because her reaction to a piece of zoning legislation was completely out of proportion to what was at stake. You could say I don't like it. You could say you're going to hurt the neighborhood. You could say you're going to affect my property values. No, you said I think it's just sick.
Well, that's the thing.
And we called it out, and she did. She actually did call lawyers. And the lawyers were all like, lady, you can't sue somebody for that. You said it. You said it. Now.
Well, the thing is, you have to make a proper argument for something. That's what I've been talking about.
New York City Councilwoman Karen Kozlowitz.
Oh, what a...
Quote.
What an unfortunate name, dude.
New York City Councilwoman Karen Kozlowitz. Quote. This was exceptionally scary today. It's chalk on a playground. What's exceptionally, you know what's exceptionally scary?
Hyperbole.
Someone sticking a gun in your face is exceptionally scary. Okay? I was walking
getting stabbed a few times is exceptionally scary.
Rollover accidents.
This is why, as much as I know you and I, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Quabble back and forth about me being liberal and you being conservative. I still have a brain, you know? Like, this is why I can't identify as Democrat or, because I'm not going to go out there and say the chalk on a sidewalk is exceptionally scary. Do you know what would be exceptionally scary? If there was a bloody knife left next to it. Would be exceptionally scary.
If somebody left a Nazi armband, that would be exceptionally scary. If someone was burning a Star of David in the middle of the playground, and all of this is around the edges of it, that is exceptionally scary.
It's like the point I was making before, where being hyperbolic, flipping out and doing something so grandiose just cheapens the message you're trying to get across.
Please stop.
It's at the point where I can almost understand Trump supporters for conservatives in general for not taking us seriously, because there's all these dum-dums doing stuff like this, calling chalk exceptionally scary. It's like, no, I'm liberal, or at least liberal leaning, but I can understand the difference between kind of disturbing and exceptionally scary. This is, oh my God, I can't even.
And by the way, as much as CNN and a lot of the online media are uncritical of this, I guarantee you that there are a lot of people who read Councilwoman Kozlowitz's quote.
Such an unfortunate name.
And had the same reaction that the people in my unnamed town had to the woman who said, it's just sick. And they are quietly repeating it among themselves and laughing about it, because the response is way out of line with what actually happened. And that's how it goes. It is WMFO Medford.
It is indeed.
Is that where we are? Are we still here?
Oh my goodness, evidently.
Yikes. Why are you so quiet
tonight?
There's
no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Here, Austin, 5-day forecast. Any minute now, the snow doom. The snow is coming to kill us all any minute now. Tonight, there are going to be snows. Maybe flurries, maybe showers. There's going to be snows. And it's going to be cold. Temperatures down around 20 degrees as the snows roll in and accumulate overnight. Good news, light fluffy snow, because it is so cold and dry outside. Bad news, maybe 5 inches of it, depending on where you are. So, particularly if you're out driving late tonight.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's part of the reason I don't want to go to Tavern. As our listeners know, I usually do after the show. Hingham's supposed to get like 7 or 8.
If you're out late tonight, please be aware of that. Please be careful. If you're driving early tomorrow morning, be aware that the roads may not be as clear as you'd like them.
And toss those windshield wipers up.
Thursday, snow.
What?
We're going to do a whole separate show on that nonsense.
It really helps when you're trying to clean off your car.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Just wait until the morning and then lift them up and you're fine.
Not if they're frozen to your windshield. Sorry, keep going. We will do it. We will talk about this for an hour next week.
If they're frozen to your windshield, you're doing it wrong. Thursday, snow showers end in the morning. We will get up to about freezing and then it falls back into the 20s. Low of about 20 degrees tomorrow night. Friday, partly cloudy skies, a little bit warmer. Highs in the upper 30s. Lows around 30 degrees Friday night. Saturday, snow is back. Afternoon snow showers, highs in the mid-30s, lows around freezing Saturday night. Not quite as much expected out of Saturday, but we'll see. And then Sunday, mostly cloudy, high around 40, lows in the mid-30s Sunday night. So the battle between winter and spring continues. It is, it'll be March on Friday, by the way. So it's coming in like a lion.
Yikes.
Likes to do that lately.
It does. I was going to say, we're like kicking winter up a notch very late in the season this year.
It is the big picture. And I have dug out another cut from my very, very favorite government public service album of all time in celebration of Black History Month.
Yeah. Hooray.
Yeah. Love this thing. James Earl Jones.
Get it.
Chic. Social Security. It's all here when we come back. More of the big picture right here on WMFO Medford.
Hello, this is James Earl Jones for Social Security, welcoming you to Genius on the Black Side. Time was when black singers, composers, and musicians had to struggle in the backwaters. Now, in the concert halls, on Broadway stages, and on Hollywood sets, they're right up there, front and center. And right up front, I'd like to invite you to listen to a genuine example of genius on the black side. Topping the charts across the country is the hot new group Chic, whose first single, Dance, 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 really caught on and headed the national pop, disco, and rhythm and blues charts. Their debut album, called Chic, became a hit soon afterwards, and Chic crisscrossed the nation on their first tour. Their music is light and airy, and as they put it themselves, it's just for fun. We'll give you a sample right after these words from Social Security. If you're like most people, you're probably looking forward to your retirement. Whether those years are as rewarding as you expect depends a great deal on you and how you prepare for them. With foresight and planning, you may not have to make any drastic changes in the way you live when you retire. Social Security was never meant to be your sole source of support when you retire, but rather a base on which you should build during your working years. If you put some of your earnings into pensions, savings, or other investments, you won't have to depend completely on your Social Security retirement payments. This isn't always easy to do during these times of high inflation, but you should certainly try. If you plan ahead, you may find out that your retirement years turn out to be the best years of your life. For more information about retirement, call or write any Social Security office. Someone there will be glad to help you. Get on your feet with Chic. Let's dance with Le Freak.
Freak out!
Time to go. And once again, it's time to remind you that you must apply for Social Security benefits. They do not come automatically. If you have any questions, just